James, click one time for me. There we go. Thank you. Okay, good evening. Welcome to our study in Genesis. We'll be in chapter 37 and 39 tonight as we begin looking at Joseph. Let me make a comment first about Jeff and working with him this quarter. I'm scheduled to teach the rest of the next five classes. So Jeff won't have any more if I stay healthy and well, maybe. But I have appreciated all his work this quarter. And I know I had a lot of notes on Genesis where I tell it before, and Jeff told me he spent 6-8 hours sometimes getting ready. So with the family and everything else going on, I know he's had a tough time. But I appreciate what he's done. So let's do a little quick review. We won't spend much time on this right quick. Jacob has come back from Laban, crossed the fords of the Jabbok, crossed the Jordan, and has gone into Shechem. And we pick him up there, built an altar to God, and we get the story of Dinah. She's probably 14, 16, some commentaries say 15, 16 years old, and she goes out to see the young lady to the land. Probably some festival occasion, some special reason, perhaps. But anyhow, Shechem, who is the son of Hamor the king, sees her and takes her and essentially rapes her, from what we can tell. Took her by force, the Bible Basic English says. Kaufman says he was an irresistible force. The King James says he defiled her. So the brothers are away, so Jacob doesn't know anything about it, except he was grieved about it, and he waits for them to get back. So the brothers contrive this thing of we'll get even. So they tell all the men of Hamor, Shechem, and all the men, if they will be circumcised like they are, then they can intermix with them and become part of them. They give a marriage and whatever. So they're deceitful when they do that. They agree, let me catch up my slides, I'm sorry. They agree, and then on the third day when they're sore, Simeon and Levi attack them and essentially wipe them out. Kills Hamor and Shechem, gets down and back. Plunders the city, takes the herds, everything, and even takes captives. Jacob's very troubled about it because he's afraid of the people of the land there. Eventually moves them from Shechem down to Bethel. We pick him up there. God told him to go there. And he told everybody in his group then to purify themselves and outwardly wash yourself and change clothes, because we're going to appear before God at Bethel. Builds an altar there. God speaks to him. He's already changed his name to Israel. Tells him, I am God Almighty. Reminds him of the promises he's made. I'll make you a great nation. I'll give you this land. They leave there and they're going south. And that's the point in which Rachel is in labor with Benjamin. And she dies during childbirth. And they bury her there near what's now Bethlehem. So we have the sons listed. If you remember, kind of like this, Leah had four, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Rachel didn't have any, so she gave her handmaid to Jacob. He has the next two, Dan and Naphtali. Leah saw that was going on, so she gives her handmaid. She has two, Gad and Asher. And then Leah has two more, Issachar and Zebulun. And then Rachel has two at the end, Joseph and Benjamin. So that's the 12 sons then. Isaac dies at Hebron. He's 180 years old. Jacob and Esau bury him there. We'll skip some of these next slides. I do want to point out one thing on this one. Jacob's in Bethel. Esau goes down to what will become the land of Edom, down below the bottom of the Dead Sea. Keep that point in mind. I'm going to use that for a reference for something else here in a minute. So just keep in mind where Edom is, at the south end of the Dead Sea, this relationship to Canaan there. We'll get back to that in a minute. So I'm going to skip a whole bunch of slides and get down to tonight's lesson. I will point out one here because it comes into play later on. That is in the genealogies. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We're going to talk about Joseph tonight, but Joseph's not in the line. It's Judah and the son born from Tamar. So it's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah. So even though we're talking about Joseph, and he's a key link to it here, he is not the lineage of Christ. So let's start with chapter 37. I want to begin by reading the first 11 verses. I want you to notice, particularly in verse 2, how quick it changes from Jacob to Joseph. And I'll have more comments about that after I read this. So let's get the first 11 verses. "And Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the genealogy of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lads was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children, because he was the son of his old age. He made him a tunic of many colors. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all the brothers, they hated him, could not speak peacefully to him. Now Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, 'Please hear this dream which I dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Behold, my sheaf rose, and all of us stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf.' And his brother said to him, 'Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?' So they hated him even more." That's the third time he said that. "For his dreams and for their words. Then he dreamed still another dream, and told it to his brothers and said, 'Look, I've dreamed another dream. This time, the sun, the moon, 11 stars bow down to me.' So he told it to his father and his brothers. And his father rebuked him and said to him, 'What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I, your brothers indeed, come and bow down to the earth before you?' And his brothers envied him, but his father kept these matters in his mind." So Joseph is 17. Keep in mind Jacob. We're going to talk about him in a minute. Still there. Joseph, 17. He's with his brothers tending sheep, and he takes a bad report back to his father. We'll get some favoritism here. Joseph is the favorite son, the son of his old age. He made him a coat of many colors, which comes into play later on. And this caused major jealousy with the brothers. More than jealousy. Hated. They hated him. It said two or three times. They hated him even more. Hated him even more. So he told them about this dream. Two dreams. The first one was, they were binding sheaves, and his sheaf stood upright, and all their sheaves bowed down to him. The question is, shall you reign over us? Shall you have dominion over us? They couldn't think about that. And again, the phrase, they hated him even more because of it. Then another dream, the second dream, this time it was the sun, moon, and 11 stars bowed down to him. Some question comes up here with this one, and I don't know the answer to it for sure. Sun, moon, 11 stars, and later it's going to say then, shall your mother, Jacob's going to say, shall I and your mother and your brothers bow down to you? But Rachel's already dead. We read about that. So did Joseph dream these dreams back before she died? But then you don't have 11 brothers, because she died in childbirth with Benjamin. Or is the mother here just accommodatively used with sun, moon, and stars? So I don't know totally the answer to that, but the question comes up sometime when you're reading that. How does the mother play into it when she's already dead? So moving down now, 12 through 22, we'll pick up the narrative there. "Then his brothers went to feed the father's flocks in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, 'Are your brothers feeding the flocks in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them.' So he said, 'Here I am.' Then he said to him, 'Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks. Bring word to me.' So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron and went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him. He was there wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, "What are you seeking?" He said, "I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they're feeding the flocks." The man said, "They had departed from here, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. And they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come therefore, let us now kill him, cast him in some pit, and we shall say some wild beast devoured him. We shall see what becomes of his dreams." But Reuben heard it and delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to their father." Shechem is about a 2-day journey from there in Hebron, and they're going up to Shechem, which is where Joseph's going to check on them. About 2 days travel, walking up there. Then they go on to Dothan then, which is some 15 miles or so further north. So he's looking for his brothers. They saw him coming. They said, "Here comes that dreamer." They remember the dreams and how they feel about them and what he thinks it represents. And so they're going to kill him. Reuben speaks up, comes to the rescue, if you would. I said, no, let's don't kill him. Let's don't shed any blood. Let's put him in this pit. Reuben's intent was to come later and get him out, take him back to his father. Now, 23 through 30. They took him and cast him to a pit. We'll go back to 23. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers, they stripped Joseph of the tunic of many colors that was on him, took him and cast him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. They sat down to eat a meal. They lifted their eyes and looked. There was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh, on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And the brothers listened. Then the Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph and lifted him out of the pit, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took took Joseph to Egypt. Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, "The lad is no more, and I, where shall I go?" So they're eating, and this band of Ishmaelite traders come by. It mentions Ishmaelites and Midian both. Midian, of course, know who Ishmael is, descendants of Ishmael. Midian is one way to remember where Edom is. But if you go almost due south down to the Red Sea, just above the Red Sea is where Midian is. So that's where these people have been from. Now they're going to Egypt, but they're Ishmaelite traders, Midianites. That's not the only place that we have the two names kind of mixed. Hold your finger there in Genesis 37. Turn to Judges chapter 8 for just 1 minute. Judges chapter 8. This is when Gideon's the judge, the fifth judge, Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon. Remember Gideon the judge. So in verse 1, man of Ephraim said to him, Gideon, "Why have you done this to us by not calling us when you went to fight with the Midianites?" And they reprimanded him sharply. Now drop down to verse 22. This is after the battle. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us, both you and your sons and your grandson also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." But Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." Then Gideon said to them, "I would like to make a request of you, that each of you would give me the earrings from the plunder. So this will now be what they took in the battle. Give me the earrings you took in the battle from the Midianites. For they had gold earrings because they were, your King James says, Ishmaelites. So they went to battle with the Midianites. You didn't hear it calls them Ishmaelites. So same time that we have here in Genesis 37, similar to it there. So at Judah's suggestion, they decide to not kill Joseph, but to sell him and make some money off of him. So they sell him for 20 shekels of silver. And he says, we don't kill him because he's our flesh and blood, but it's okay to sell him because he's your flesh and blood, I guess. You're not going to kill him, but you'll sell him and to never see him again. And you get to thinking about how wealthy this family was. Think back to how Abraham had been blessed and Isaac and Jacob and how much he got from Laban, how much he brought with him out. They were very, very well off. And they sold him for 20 shekels of silver. There's 10 brothers. It's only 2 shekels each. Doesn't seem like a lot to get when you got all the wealth they've got. Just a thought to pitch out there. So the Ishmaelites took Joseph to Egypt. And now let's finish the chapter, 31 through 36. So they took Joseph's tunic, killed the kid of the goats, dipped the tunic in blood, and they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "We have found this. Do you know whether it's your son's tunic or not?" He recognized it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "For I shall go down to the grave with my son in mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. So this is where the story gets touchy, emotional. Reuben tore his clothes when he found out Joseph was gone, but Reuben had a plan to go back and get him out. It didn't work that way. Brothers dipped Joseph's coat in blood, went to his father and said, "Is this your son's coat?" Not "this is our brother's coat, is this your son's coat?" And of course, he recognized it, knew it was. Then it says he mourned for many days. And all his sons and daughters tried to comfort him, but he wouldn't be comforted. His total conclusion is that Joseph is ripped to pieces. You think about how you would feel if one of your, this time your favorite son is ripped to pieces. He refused to be comforted. And then Joseph was sold to Potiphar, the captain of the guard of Pharaoh. We'll pick up Joseph in chapter 37. I'll maybe say more about him there, what he's going through. This time right now it's Jacob and his situation, thinking about what happened to his son. So let's look at some quick lessons right quick from 37 before we go to 39. Favoritism, that the coat of many colors made for Joseph, but you got to think back. What had gone on in Jacob's life? Well, his parents had the same problem. Remember, Isaac liked Esau because he liked his game, and Rebekah favored Jacob. So you got favoritism going on in both generations here. Jealousy. Wrath is cruel. Anger is a torrent. Who's able to stand before jealousy? The brothers, jealous over Joseph. Family Bible notes, mere anger is temporary, but envy, like a poison serpent, is ever watching for an opportunity to strike its victims. Wrath is cruel, anger is outrageous, but a secret enmity at the person of another, an envy of his prosperity, and a desire of revenge for some injury are much more mischievous. He that grieves at the good of another will be still contriving to do him hurt and will keep his anger forever. Sounds like those brothers, doesn't it? Hatred. They hated him. As it said multiple times. Hatred. Galatians 5, 19, the works of the flesh. Hatred is listed as one of those. About the opposite of brotherly love, kindness, and the fruit of the Spirit. Deceit, when they go back and deceive Jacob. Let me read you three or four verses from Job chapter 11. Can you search out the deep things of God? That's the question that's being asked here in Job. Can you search out the deep things of God? Can you find the limits of the Almighty? They are higher than the heavens. What can you do? Deeper than Sheol. What can you know? Their measures longer than the earth and broader than the sea. If he passes by it in prisons and gathers in judgment, who then can hinder him? For he knows deceitful men and he sees wickedness also. Speaking about Jehovah. God, can you search out the deep things? God knows the deceitful men. He sees wickedness. Also from Job, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Job 27:4. Then Psalms 5:6. You shall destroy those who speak falsehood. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man. The Lord abhors. Think of that word. In Proverbs 26, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and then says, I was only joking. And then Jesus in Mark 7 says, from within, out of the heart, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit. Comes out of the evil heart. All these evil things come from within and defile a man, Jesus said. And you got peer pressure. The brothers, one against the other. You should not follow a crowd to do evil, Exodus 23. We know 1 Corinthians 15:33, it says, evil company corrupts good habits. Some older translations say evil communications, but it's more than just conversation. It's association. It's companionship with evil that affects you. Many are going in at the broad gate. People are taking one another with them. All right, let's move to chapter 39. Pick up with Joseph. Joseph, 17, keep that in mind. 17 years old, and his brothers sell him. He's taken away, no choice. Has no idea if he'd ever see family again or not. Sold into captivity to these Ishmaelite traders, taken to Egypt, and then sold again to Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard. Now Joseph had been taken to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken them down there. And the Lord was with Joseph. He was a successful man. And was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Notice, I want you to notice, multiple times it's going to say in this chapter about the Lord being with Joseph. It's in verse 2, 3, 21, 23, and it's implied in verse 5. So over and over, the Lord is with Joseph. The Lord is with Joseph. Joseph by himself, but the Lord is with him. Verse 2 again, the Lord was with Joseph. He was a successful man to the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. And the Lord made him all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in the sight of him and served him. He made him overseer of his house. and all he had was put in his hand. So it was in the first time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, did not know which he had except for the bread he ate. And Joseph was a handsome man in form and appearance. Now it came to pass after these things, his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There's no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How can I do these great wickednesses, this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and some of the men of the house were out inside. None of the men of the house were inside. That she called him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was when she saw that he had left the garment in her hand and fled outside, she called to the men of the house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. It happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. Then she spoke to him with the words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came into me to mock me. So it happened, I lifted up my voice and cried. He left his garment with me and fled outside." So it was when his master heard these words, which his wife spoke to him, saying, "Your servant did to me after this manner," that his anger was aroused. Joseph's master took him, put him in prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. He was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. The keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did was there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. So you think about this, go through that, and I kind of talk about this in a minute. Let me ask you, think about this. Was Joseph put in charge through God's providence? Was Joseph put in charge of Potiphar's house and later the prison to prepare him for leading Egypt? He's a 17-year-old when he was sold into Egypt. So did God's providence lead him to be in charge of Potiphar's house, be in charge of the prison, to get him ready to be in the position God would give him in Egypt? Something to think about. He's a successful man, that's mentioned several times, and his success was noted by Potiphar, who he was serving. He was a handsome man. So where Potiphar was noticing what Joseph did, Potiphar's wife is noticing Joseph. Potiphar puts him in charge of all that he has. So all he has is bread to eat. Other than that, Joseph takes care of everything. And the Lord blessed Potiphar because of Joseph. But Potiphar's wife, the text uses the words cast longing eyes for him. Joseph, she wants Joseph to lie with her. Again and again, it seems Joseph refused, saying, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Think about this. Young boy, a long ways from home, who's going to know what he's doing? What's Joseph saying? "How can I do this and sin against God?" Let me read you a little bit from Kaufman's commentary. Everybody knows who Josephus is. Josephus is the Jewish historian. Josephus reports this incident in far greater detail, giving the conversation that took place upon the occasion, indicating that Potiphar's wife not only promised absolute secrecy, but promised Joseph greater advancements than he had already enjoyed. They even threatened to become a witness accusing him of the very act if he refused her. So she's going to accuse him of it if he doesn't lie with her, according to what Josephus is saying. So the other tale about the experience is the fact that when Joseph protested about sinning against God, the Potiphar's wife stripped herself, threw her garment over an Egyptian statue, a god, that adorned the room and said, God won't be able to see it now. And then the question is asked in here is to why was Joseph permitted to be confronted with such a test? One commentator says, by passing this test, he proved he'd be able to rule over the land of impurity and immorality without succumbing to the influences around him when he rules over Egypt. Apparently, she kept up this seduction day by day. They were in the house alone. She caught him by his garment. In the house alone, again, the commentators think this would be some special occasion where the master of the house will be out, maybe with the other nobles of the land there, some festival occasion, and she stayed back so nobody's around. So this time, they're in the house alone. She caught him by his garment. He left the garment, ran outside. So then she tells the men that the servants are around, and her husband, what Joseph has attempted to do to her, was lying about it. So Potiphar had Joseph confined to the prison. But again, it says twice that the Lord was with Joseph, gave him favor in the sight of the prison keeper. He placed him in charge of all the prison. So he has risen to be over Potiphar's house. Now he's risen to be in charge of the prison, so that the keeper of the prison didn't know what was going on in the prison, except what Joseph did. And the Lord then continued to bless him. There we go. So let's talk about this a little bit. Responsibility. Joseph went to the house to do what? To do his work. He's 17 years old when he's sold into Egypt. Look what position he's in now. Don't know how much time has passed. How long was he a servant of Potiphar before Potiphar saw what was going on and raised him to that position? I don't know that. We talked about before, learning to work. So we mentioned that again. Work with your own hands, Paul said. You don't work, you don't eat. Seduction, lust for fornication. Proverbs 7. This is going to be a little summary of this verses. There's a woman met him with the attire of a harlot, a crafty heart, lurking at every corner. Come, let us delight ourselves with love. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. Immediately he went after her. He did not know it would cost his life. Thankfully, Joseph refused that and did not do it. Lying, very much in play here. Revelation 21, verse 8, all liars will have their place. Fire and brimstone. Resistance. Joseph, standing true, even at great hurt. He knows that if he gives in to her, what's going to happen? If he refuses her, what's going to happen? And he says, I can't sin against God. Keep in our minds, when we sin, we may sin against someone else, a brother, but we sin against God. Sometimes the only way to avoid sin is to flee from temptation. That's what Joseph did. It's not cowardice, the realistic acknowledgement of the power of sin and also of one's need of God's help in a time of trial and temptation. All of our weaknesses, if we could just remember God. Joseph's being blessed. He doesn't, I don't know if he realizes it or not, what God's doing with him. No family, been sold into slavery. I don't know how much Joseph realizes what's happening when he's raised to these positions in Potiphar's house, in the prison. But God's taking care of him. Faithfully in the most difficult circumstances, the Lord was with him. Whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. So the faith and fading is right quick. A couple of things to think about. Faith, of course, Joseph is there with that. The failings, Jacob, his favoritism, the brothers with jealousy, hatred, physical abuse, deceit, lying. And then, of course, Potiphar's wife with her lust and seduction and her lying. We maybe add more to it. For Sunday, chapters 40, 41, and 42. And also, if you would, go read Psalms 105. It ties with this so much. In fact, you have time for 104, 105, 106. Those three psalms kind of go together. But particularly pay attention to Psalms 105. And these next three chapters, 40, 41, and 42, will be what we'll have Sunday. I don't know if the bell's rung or not. I didn't hear it, if it did. Anybody got thoughts? Somebody? Yeah, let me take that comment Brett made about Joseph and tie it back to Jacob, which I meant to do. I'm glad you said that. Let me think about it. Remember, we read Jacob in the very first, and then everything turned to Joseph. That's not the story, really. Why is Joseph there? To get Jacob's family into Egypt, to prepare for him. He becomes a great nation there. All these things God had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob come true through the story of Joseph. But the important thing is Jacob's life and where he's going to wind up. So keep Jacob in mind. Don't let Jacob go out, because he's very much a center part of what's going on. We're just seeing a different part when we see Joseph right now.